The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is Justin Coletti from Sonic Scoop, coming at you from my home studio once again. And today, we're going to be on probably what's one of the most important topics we might discuss all year, and that is your money and finances in a creative profession. If you are in a creative field like I am, and I'm assuming that you are if you're listening to this podcast, chances are that, you know, money and finances are not your first passion, or else you probably would have picked some other field to be in that maybe has a more surefire path to financial predictability, security, and all the rest of it. But whether or not, you know, money and finance is something that's at the front of your mind, is like a driving passion in your life, and for a lot of us, it's not, you still need to master this part of your life in order to have a sustainable career in any creative field. The bottom line is that you can't really continue on having a career as an artist, as a freelancer, as a studio owner, as a small business operator in a creative space, unless you have mastered this part of your life. It is not optional. Half of the words music business is business. Half of the term studio business is business. And we really have to have that handled in order to keep at it in a sustainable way. Now, if you know absolutely nothing about money and, you know, personal finance and all that, no problem. I think today's talk is going to be great for you. I'm going to give you some core principles that you can start applying right now to dramatically change your situation. And even if you do feel like you kind of have this part of your life mastered, I still think you're going to get a lot out of today's conversation. I mean, first of all, even if you, this isn't the kind of thing that you master once and then forget about. This subject is something you've kind of constantly got to revisit. I know that I do. And I know that when I stop looking at my books in a decent way for an extended period of time, things start to go in the wrong direction. And when I stay on top of them and look at them just a little bit more closely, I can get things going in the right direction. So this is something you need to constantly revisit, even if you feel like you've gotten some of these core principles down and have done well with your money and finances in the past. One of the interesting things with getting your money situation together is that sometimes we make the biggest mistakes, not when times are bad, but when they're good. And that's sometimes when we fall into bad habits that we can end up paying for later. So even if everything's going okay for you right now, I think that now is a good time to step back, look at and say, hey, is what we're doing sustainable? Are we going the right direction? Are we going towards our goals, whatever those goals might be? And when we're going to talk about goals in this context of mastering your money, mastering your finances in a creative field, the goals just aren't about dollars and cents. They're about what you're going to do with your life. They're about realizing creative vision, about living the kind of life you want to live, about working on projects that interest you more. Those are the goals when it comes to money and finance. It's not just having money. It's not just being financially secure. It's what those things open up for you. There's an old joke in the music business. It's something along the lines of, what does a musician do when they win $1 million in the lottery? Punchline, keep playing gigs until the money runs out. Well, it does not have to be that way. We can keep you playing gigs or doing whatever it is that you want to do creatively for a long time to come if we can just get this part of your life handled. And like I said, I'm going to give you some core principles I think you can take away, put into action right now. There's going to be at least five of them, really key takeaways. Maybe you're doing some of these already, but chances are, if you're like the average American, chances are you're not doing all five of these already. Most people do not have their financial houses in order at all. I know that for the longest time, I didn't at all. And if you are completely lost and you're starting from zero, I was absolutely there too. And sometimes you have an advantage if you're starting from zero. And we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later on. Before we get into it and dive right into today's topic, one of the most important and surprisingly one of the most interesting topics that you can get into, before we dive in, we've got to do something that helps keep this podcast financially stable, and that is thank our sponsors, without whom this podcast would be literally quite impossible. So, big thank you to SonarWorks, new sponsor this month. If you want to treat out your room, make your room sound better, I always recommend starting with acoustic treatment. But SonarWorks can take your room even further by playing signal into it, allowing you to sample the idiosyncrasies of your room and your speakers and compensate for them. Really easy to use software and hardware, and fairly inexpensive too, surprisingly so. I know that anyone who's reviewed these for Sonic Scoop so far, the SonarWorks package, has been a big fan of it. So check them out at sonarworks.com. Also sponsoring again this month, Eventide. Eventide Audio, making some of my favorite effects on the planet, both hardware and software. They've got a really cool new guitar pedal out called Rose. They just issued a remake of their classic phaser from the 1970s in plug-in form, the Instant Phaser, like the Led Zeppelin Cashmere sound. Very cool stuff. And Soundtoys. Check them out at soundtoys.com, making some more of my favorite plugins. The Soundtoys bundle will let you do like anything weird or interesting you ever wanted to do. And for a price, I think that makes a lot of sense. So check them out, eventideaudio.com, soundtoys.com. Check both those guys out as well. Thanks for sponsoring. And now, let's dive right into it. Okay, so I have some notes here. I want to make sure that I don't leave any of this stuff out. So if I glance at them occasionally, if you're watching this in video, I hope that doesn't bug you here. I think we've already touched a little bit on what getting a good handle on your money and financial situation means to me and what I hope it should mean to you. To me, getting this part of your life handled means freedom. It means freedom to take on the projects that you want to take on. Freedom maybe to quit a day job and not to go back to one, or to only work part of the time on the stuff that you don't love so you have more time to pursue the things that you do. It can mean anything. It can mean making art in a less compromising fashion, actually having the kind of budget you need to make creative work in the way that you really want to make it. It could mean opening a studio, starting a small business. There's so many things that getting this part of your life together could mean. And it's something you really can't ignore in your life, like I said, or you cannot be sustainable. You cannot continue doing the things that you're doing unless you have this handled. There's that old another old joke. I'm going to tell a lot of finance jokes, apparently, during this podcast. But another good one is, how did you go broke? Slowly and then suddenly. And that's how things are if you're not observing and every once in a while just checking in on this part of your life. You make mistakes that little by little kind of trickle away your freedom and your ability to do the things you want to do. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself in a position where it's like, wow, I have to change everything, or I can't continue pursuing the things I wanted to pursue, or right now I'm stuck. And man, being in a not good financial place, it feels so limiting. And that's one thing I want to see if we can help you do today, is make sure that if you feel limited right now, you can break out of that. And if you're in a good stride right now, that you can keep going without being limited in the future. I said that if you're like most people and like me, and you don't come from a background of a family that knows money, I didn't come from a background of a family that knew anything about money. I didn't know anything about money. You can actually have an advantage. It wasn't really until my mid or maybe even late 20s that I realized and finally admitted to myself that, man, I know nothing about money. I mean, like zero. Like the most fundamental things, like what is money? Why is it worth anything at all? Have you ever puzzled over that question in your head? Chances are, if you haven't studied this stuff in some depth, you might not have a really clear, cogent answer for that. What is money? Why does it have any value at all? How is it that I can go into a store and either give them pieces of paper or even digitally suggest the idea of money and somehow they give me stuff? How does this work? Why is it worth anything at all? I mean, I had to admit to myself, man, I don't really know what a stock even is or a bond even is. And I don't really have a clear idea about how people like become wealthy or financially secure or start making more money or save for crazy sounding things like buying a house or taking like a mini retirement so you can focus on a crazy, you know, artistic project. But those things are all achievable if you don't come from money, and even if you don't know anything about money, and if you were raised in a way, like most of us, to not know anything about money. I mean, certainly they do not teach this stuff in school at all. So again, I hope some of the core principles you're going to take away today serve you well and really could change your life significantly in good ways. Getting your financial house in order is actually surprisingly simple, but it does take some doing. And I think these principles underlie really any financial success story of whatever level. And financial success stories, like I said, can be simple, you know? It can be having the resources to own a home if you want to do that, or start a family, or open your own business, or go on tour, or do like all those financial success stories. If you weren't prepared or able to do those things, and then you get to a place where you are, I think all of them really employ these principles in some way or another. And these ideas can scale up and scale way up too. And I think these same core principles, if you want to take them further, are what's behind people who are like wildly financially successful. And that doesn't have to be a goal of yours. We'll talk a lot about that, about goals and values. I think that's one of the key things, where I'm not big into money just for the sake of money. I'm into the idea of you getting a handle on money and finances so that you can pursue the things that you really do value. I'd recommend that to you, especially as a creative person, but just as a human being in general, that pursuing money as a tool that allows you to get what you really want out of life is the best way to look at it, rather than as an end in and of itself. If you can have a big why, a reason for why you're doing this stuff, that is huge. And we'll get back to that in some detail later on when we talk about some tactics that we can derive from these huge principles. And to explore the first one of these core principles, I'm going to give you a quote from Charles Dickens in the 19th century, and I'll update it and paraphrase it just a little bit, but it would go something like this today. Annual income, $60,000. Annual expenditure, $59,000. Result, happiness. Annual income, $60,000. Annual expenditure, $61,000. Result, misery. And I think I could practically end the podcast right there, because everything is just, we're going to talk about, is a derivation of this simple idea that basically you've got to have a surplus. And we'll get into actionable advice about how you can create that surplus, even if it feels like, man, I'm stretched to my limit. How am I going to create a financial surplus? I'm bumping up against a wall and there's just nothing more to cut. No ways I can think to earn more. You can. I've heard this same idea referred to as the universal law of prosperity. You've got to produce more than you consume. Squirrels know it. Chipmunks know it. At least the ones that survive do. And you should damn well know it too. So that's the first big idea, is plan to have a surplus. Our expenses have this nasty way of rising, it seems, to pretty much exactly match however much we're earning, and in unfortunate cases, go above that. So one of the first things you can do, like I said, is plan to have a surplus. Before the money that you earn in any given month comes in and then can be diverted to all of your expenses, plan to set some of that aside. If you make, let's just do a round number, $4,000 per month, $1,000 per week. Maybe you're making a lot less than that. Maybe you're making a lot more. Doesn't matter. But let's just take this round number. Say you're making $4,000 per month. Before you can start allocating those $4,000 to the things that you need to spend that money on, take a chunk of it and make sure it goes right to a savings account, or better yet, an investment account. If you can take, even siphon off anything, $50 a month out of that $4,000 and siphon it off to a savings account, you could be in a better place than you currently are. Better yet, $100 a month, $200 a month. And I will come up with targets for what it should be, maybe much higher than that if you can. And we'll talk about ways of getting there. But whatever you can start with, if it's $50 a month, you know, that's like $12.50 a week, you can do that. You can find a way to get into that habit of automating a portion of the money that hits your, say, checking account or whatever, goes straight into some kind of savings account, or perhaps better yet, some kind of brokerage account. And we'll get into that in more detail. This may not sound like a ton of money, but you'd be surprised what it could do. Let's take the idea of $50 a week. All right, I'm going to do some math here. $50 a week times 52 weeks in a year times 10 years. If I did my math right just before this, that would equal $26,000 over 10 years, right? That's not bad. That's enough to make a pretty nice album, or maybe it's even enough to maybe start a very kind of humble studio. But it could actually be significantly better than that. If we're talking about saving and investing, and here's a big concept for you, not just working for money, but having the money that you've earned work for you by giving you interest, it can turn into a lot more. With a compounding rate of interest of, say, 8%, which is a number that a lot of people throw out there as a return that you might expect from the stock market over a long period of time, that compounding interest on the money that you're putting in could end up being something more like $40,000 over 10 years. So you're putting in something close to $20,000, $26,000, and you're ending up with, you know, close enough to double that, or at least significantly more, by putting your money to work for you. Now, that's not a fortune by any stretch, but it is a 20% down payment on a pretty decent house. It is a really uncompromising first release for an independent or self-released artist. I mean, that's a pretty healthy budget. It could be enough to take a whole year off from working a job that you don't really like to throw yourself into a career in a creative field and have a cushion for an entire year. So imagine, I mean, if you were starting with this approach of saving $50 a week from the age of 16, by 26, you could be in that kind of place. If you increase your savings rate and potentially increase your investment returns, you can get to a much better place much sooner as well. I mean, these are really manageable amounts, but you can see that they stack into something that can be meaningful in your life. You could potentially save a lot more than that. You could potentially have a lot better investment returns. It is possible. I have and continue to do it. You can also have a lot worse investment returns, and we can talk about strategies there, maybe just scratching the surface today. We can dive deeper on that some other time. But I want to now give you a strategy that relates to this one that's going to make saving a whole lot easier. And that is to not just save arbitrarily, to just start figuring out a number to put aside. It's to save and invest towards goals. Getting back to that concept again, if you have a why, it becomes so, so much easier to save and invest significant amounts. It's really hard to take money that you could be spending right now and divert it to future use unless there's a really clear reason. For me, some of the things that kept me going when I first started getting this part of my life into order was that I wanted to be able to own a home at some point, and I wanted to have enough financial cushion where I wouldn't have to go back to a day job if everything went wrong in my creative career. And I wanted to have enough of a cushion where if everything started to go, you know, really badly financially, there'd be enough resources there where I could continue to work at a creative field and continue to spend a lot of time with my family and my new daughter. I didn't want to have to go back to some 40 to 80 hour a week job and to take on things, because I absolutely had to take on things when I have, you know, then a newborn daughter at home. I wanted to be able to be around. So those were some of the goals that I saved for. Through my business, you could have a goal of doing something like saving for creating a home studio. I mean, pick the goals that work for you. Do you want to do a full-length album? Do you want to travel the world? Do you want to take 3 months off or 6 months off to pursue your craft? Do you want to open a studio of your own? Do you want to trick out a home studio of your own? All of these could be potential things that you're going to save or invest for. So you need to get that why happening before you really start to figure out the exact amount you should set aside. Also, this will help you do some of the math too, right? Because you can kind of reverse engineer the problem. So if you don't have a goal yet, I'm going to suggest a first goal for you. And that is to come up with an emergency fund. This is one of the most commonly repeated pieces of advice out there in, you know, the world of personal finance. One of the first things you save for is an emergency fund. One good way to think about it as a creative person is as FU money. Money where you can walk away from a job if it is sucking too much away from your craft. money that allows you to turn down gigs you don't want to take so you can focus on pursuing the gigs that you do want to take. So a good target here would be to save up, say, 3 months' expenses. Let's say your expenses are $4,000 a month. An early target could be to save up $12,000. And if everything went terribly wrong for you for 3 months, you'd be fine. You'd have to hustle like hell in those months to make up for lost time and get yourself back on track. So having 3 months of emergency funds socked away is a great start. It's better to have even more runway. What if you could have 6 months emergency fund? What if you could have 12 months emergency fund? I mean, the ability to take a full year off whenever you wanted to by having 12 months emergency fund set aside, imagine what you could do with that time. And this is one of the beautiful things that money can do. Money in and of itself isn't necessarily beautiful, but it can do things like buy time. And that is kind of beautiful because, man, time is probably about the most precious resource you have. And it's so easy to let it get away when we're being pulled in different directions by our immediate needs. Having something saved up, set aside, lets you become the master of your own fate and the master of your own time in a way that you might not be as of yet. So once you've come up with some of these goals that you want to pursue, then, like I said, you can reverse engineer it. You can figure out the savings rate you need to meet those goals. And that can change based on where you are in your life. I mean, I've had a savings rate as high as 50% a year. Now, I didn't do that year after year after year, but that's something that can be done. I mean, when I landed a fairly well-paying job in the audio field and my income went up practically double overnight, instead of living like my salary had doubled, I tried to live exactly the same and put away basically half of my income. Man, you do that for a year or two, you can change your life. You do that for 1 year. If you save half of your income for 1 year, the very next year, wow, you could take it off if you wanted to. Or you could start pursuing some of those other goals with those resources that you set aside. I've also had savings rates as low as 5% in a year or negative occasionally, even after I had money figured out because other priorities took precedence over making sure that I was going absolutely in the right direction at that moment financially. And that's okay, but it's something that you want to revisit at because you can't have a negative burn rate indefinitely. Eventually, it will catch up with you. So what are good targets? Well, 5% of your income is a good place to start. I have no question that if you apply yourself right now, you can find ways to save 5% of your income, whether that's cutting 5% of your expenses, even if you feel like you're stretched to the bone, or if it means increasing your income, and we'll look at strategies to do that. 10% is pretty admirable. I think the average person, if you could save 10% of your income over the course of a year, that's a pretty good place to be, and you know, no complaints there. 20% or more, and that's really going to put you on track for probably being in a better, much better financial situation than the average person is, and really meeting a lot of goals and really finding your situation snowball for the better and finding yourself get more and more freedom. 50% or more is phenomenal. That can be hard to sustain for a while. But if you're a really ambitious person, there's really no portion of your income that's too high because ultimately, the amount that you could earn is infinite. And I mean that in the literal sense, like however much money you earn this year, you could earn $1 more. And if you earned $1 more, you could potentially earn $1 more than that. So literally the amount that you can earn is infinite. Unfortunately, the amount that you can cut out of your day-to-day expenses is not infinite. At a certain point, you're going to have either just a miserable life, so what's the point, or you're going to come down to a point where you start cutting into your productivity and your earning power actually decreases because you're trying all these ways to be frugal and to cut your expenses. So we can talk more about that in a sec, but those are really our first three core principles. One, produce more than you consume. Two, pay yourself first by automatically siphoning some of your income into a savings and or investment account. Number three, come up with goals to make that process more meaningful, more sustainable, and then reverse engineer your necessary savings rate based on those goals and the time frame in which you want to achieve them. So once you've done those three exercises and you've come up with a plan to make sure that you have a surplus, how do you actually go about saving more? Well, you've got two options, right? One option is to cut your expenses, and the other option is to earn more. I guess there's a third option, both, which ideally you may want to do. So for cutting your expenses, the first thing to do is track what you're spending. I would recommend signing up for a free kind of budget tracker if you haven't done that already. Mint.com is one that I've used for a long time. PersonalCapital.com, that's another one that I've used with good results. And basically, you can hook these into your financial account, your checking account, your savings account, all of that. And you can track not only what's coming in, but how much you're spending and where. And most people don't do this, unfortunately, but it's really crucial. Once you've got a sense for where your money is actually going, only then can you really bring your expenditure under control. And one of the things that you'll find when you do this, if you track, say, 60 days or 90 days of what you're actually spending, you're going to come to the realization that, man, I am often spending money on things that don't really matter to me. I mean, how much money did I waste on stuff that, like, I don't really care that much about? So to make this process really easy, you've got to be honest with yourself about what really satisfies you when you spend money and what doesn't. And the answers for you are going to be potentially totally different than they are for me. So I remember when I first did this exercise, I realized, my God, how much I was spending on eating out. And I don't even really like eating out that much. I actually kind of prefer cooking. I think the food is usually better that way. I kind of like the art of making food, of creating a cool dish. I feel like I usually just get better food and end up spending less money doing it. So at a certain point, I said, wow, I'm spending all this money eating out. Let me just cut that completely. At a certain point, I realized I don't like going to the movies that much anymore. I mean, there's so many things I'd really rather do. I'd rather read a book. I'd rather listen to a record. I'd rather go to a show. And I cut out going to the movies like really dramatically. Now, for you, it might be exactly the opposite. You know, maybe going to the movies is something that you want to spend, you know, lavishly on, and that's okay. But really what it comes down to is identifying those areas of your budget that you actually feel like you get something out of, that are really important to you and speak to your values. And then those things that you don't really care about, I mean, cut them out ruthlessly. Maybe you care about having a decent wardrobe and nice clothes to wear. If so, you know, cut other things out so you can spend lavishly in that area and not be too concerned about. Or maybe you're a little more like me. I don't really care that much about what I wear, except I do try to have a slightly different outfit for each episode of this podcast. For those of you on video, you're welcome. But it is done with, you know, fairly inexpensive clothes that I've had for, you know, a pretty long time. It's just not a big thing for me, buying a lot of clothes. Plus, I get so many great t-shirts from all of our sponsors and stuff. So keep those coming, please. So if you're like me, you might be able to cut your wardrobe budget really, really, really low and allow yourself to spend more money in other places. So again, it comes down to, you know, what you really value. So really, I don't believe in cutting back on the things that you love, but I do believe cutting back as much as you can on the things that you don't. If you were to go through this exercise and you actually didn't save more money, and you just ended up being conscious of what you're really spending money on and what really satisfies you and what doesn't, even that alone can improve the quality of your life. But I really doubt that you're going to go through this exercise without saving some money. There's a great saying, that which is measured will generally improve. Something along those lines. I've heard it said many different ways, many different times. But something that you measure is generally going to improve. If you actually track this and just tune in, you know, once you've got this established, tune in once a month, something like that. If you want to be more active than that, you can tune in once a week. Doesn't take long. Log into mint.com, log into personalcapital.com, see where your money was going, see if you're on track for reaching the goals you want that way. Now, the problem with cutting spending, of course, is you can only cut so much. Yeah, you can live with your parents, and that is a great way to save a lot of money. You can live with roommates, and that is a great way to save a lot of money. You could, instead of having a new car, have an older used car, or not have a car at all. These are great ways of saving a lot of money. But at a certain point, you're going to cut to a point where either A, your life is miserable, or B, you're cutting into your own productivity, and you're actually dampening your earning power as well as your quality of life by cutting too far. Like I said before, your income is absolutely nothing like this. Your potential to earn money is literally infinite. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to go out tomorrow and make $1 billion, but it does mean that if you make $40,000 next year, you could be making $40,001. And if you can make $40,001, you can make $40,002, and so on and so on and so on. And you can get from 40,000 to 80,000. And if it's really an interest of yours, you can get from 80,000 to 120,000. And if it's really an interest of yours, you can go up higher than that. You may not need to. Your goals may be met at a lower level of income, or you may have goals that really require you to work harder and think about how you can earn more. And no matter where you are, there are always ways to earn more. And I'm going to give you some exercises right now that are super effective and have helped me in life figuring out how I can earn more. So a quick note, to earn more, you may have to improve your work skills, right? There might be skills that you're missing right now, where if you had those skills, you could start earning more. To earn more, you may have to improve your social skills. We talked a lot about that in episode 7 of the podcast with A.L. Levy. But in many cases, to earn more, what you really need is to improve your imagination. You may already have sufficient work skills and sufficient social skills to earn more than you are currently. And I think that's the case for most people. I'm not saying don't improve your work skills. I'm not saying don't improve your social skills. But I'm saying work on the imagination side, because even more than the work skills and the social skills, that's what's lacking for so many of us. I know it's been true for me. You can probably turn around with the current skills you have, earn more than you are now. And here's a way to do it. And this is ruthlessly stolen from a book called Think and Grow Rich. It is a cheesy old title from, I think, the 1930s. But it does have this exercise in there where if you read the first chapter of this book and do this exercise, I can pretty much guarantee you that within a month, your income is going to increase. It's worked for me. It's worked for other people. And I go long periods without doing this. And I'm like, oh, I need to start earning more money. And I do this really simple exercise. And then within a month or two, my income situation has improved. And I'm like, why don't I do this all the time? I don't know why I don't do it all the time. So here it is. If you're having trouble imagining how you can earn more, you want to get into the place of thinking about how you can solve problems for other people. So that's a big thing. The way you're going to earn more money in your life is by filling unmet needs, by curing real pains that people have, by facilitating the wants, needs, goals, and desires of others. And that's where this exercise really comes in handy. So, I mean, this can have really profound ramifications. So write down, I mean, with like pen and paper ideal, you could do it on a computer, but write down how much you currently earn. And then write down how much you want to earn based on the goals and budget that we established earlier. So you write down how much you're earning. You write down how much you need to earn to meet your goals. And then write down how you are going to earn that additional amount. Be specific. What services are you going to provide and sell to others? What product or good are you going to sell? How much per month? How exactly are you going to make this additional income? Write it down. Staring at that blank piece of paper or blank screen and trying to think of ways that you could make that additional income, I mean, you'd be surprised what you can come up with. If you're having trouble imagining possible ways that you can earn more than you do now, make another list. Make a list of the skills that you have, the work skills that you already have, and then write down what kinds of people are ready and willing to pay for benefiting from those kinds of skills that you have. I mean, this sounds so deceptively simple, right? Write down how much you're earning. Figure out how much you need to be earning to meet your goals, and write down what you're going to do to earn that much more. Specifically, how many more live sound gigs could you do? How many more days of recording could you do? How many more days of being a session guitarist you could do? How many more video shoots or video edits you could do? Or how many more articles you could write? Whatever it is in your creative field, figure out how much you'd have to do, how much you'd have to reasonably earn for each of those tasks. Once you have that goal, that path in mind, it's so much easier to execute on than if these things remain nebulous. All right. So again, it sounds simple, but do that task. And if you want to hear it explained in even more detail or read it explained in even more detail, you could probably find the book Think and Grow Rich absolutely free. Read the first chapter or so, do what it says in there, and it will help you do better in life. Okay, so finally, there's just one more principle, and we could do a whole podcast on that principle. And this principle is to take your excess and think first about whether you should be saving it or investing it. Once you've planned for a surplus and you have that surplus, think, am I going to save or am I going to invest the surplus? Maybe you do a portion of each. Saving is preserving your capital, your purchasing power for a later date and time. If you need to have funds available in 1 year, 2 years, maybe even 3 years, you probably want to err on the side of saving, of preserving what you've set aside, much more so than in investing, because investing does open you up for risk. For those longer term goals, and I hope that you have some goals that are going to take 5 years or 10 years or 15 years to realize. Maybe retiring is one of those goals. Maybe retiring early is one of those goals. Maybe buying a house is one of those goals. Maybe having enough set aside to start a family, and you could even take off work to do that if you want. Maybe that's a goal. Those things could be achievable 5 years, 10 years, 15 years out. And for those goals, you want to think about investing. And here's a related principle. When it comes to investing, you want to think about taking on asymmetric risk, meaning you want to be investing in things ideally where they can't go down that much, but they could go up a whole lot. Another way to say this is buy low and sell high. Not talking about market timing. I'm talking about having a sense of value and relative value. And I have found that if you are consistently investing in things that are less expensive than they should be and can't go down a lot, you end up in a place where you're preserving, you know, downside risk and purchasing power for later. And those same things tend to be the things with the most potential to go up a lot. Ideally, when you're thinking about investing, though, you're not even thinking about buying low and selling high. I mean, in my opinion, the very best way to do investing is to buy things and then essentially hold them forever because they pay you to hold them. And that really should be the idea behind investing, is that investing should mean you take some money that you've earned and you give up that money, that capital, to acquire, or better yet, create, build an asset that pays you income month after month after month. So if you could give up $10,000 to get $1,000 a month, that's a really good investment, right? That is something that's going to pay for itself, is going to pay you back within a year. And then each year on top of that, you're essentially doubling your money each year. Wow. If you could find that kind of investment, you'd be in great shape and you'd never have to sell it. You can hold on to it forever. Where could I find a deal that great? Well, here is the very first place to invest. When the word investing comes up, most people think of investing in stocks. Maybe they think of bonds. Maybe they think of commodities. Maybe they think of cryptocurrencies. Maybe they think of precious metals. Any and all of those things could be something that you look to invest in potentially. But the places you'll get the biggest returns, absolutely, bar none, no question, is when you invest in yourself and when you invest in your own business. I remember talking to the guys from Unstoppable Recording Machine. I had A.L. Levy on the podcast, but I remember having a conversation with one of his partners, Joel Wanasek, really fun guy. And he said, you know, there have been investments I've made in my own business where I spent $700 and I made 7,000% in return. And I can immediately identify with that. I remember buying the first DSLR camera for Sonic Scoop so that we could start making video blog series. And some of those videos went on to have tens or hundreds of thousands of hits on YouTube. And they allowed me to sell video making services to other companies and other brands in the field. They allowed me to grow the reach. They brought in new mastering clients. Oh my goodness, how much of a return did we get on that $700 camera? Pretty significant. It doesn't have to be stuff either. Investing in skills. I mean, editing skills, musicianship skills, social skills, any of these things, investing in yourself. Those are things that can pay dividends forever. So when you have money set aside to invest, first look for places within your own career and within your own business to invest. And usually, here's a great thing, is you'll get the best tax advantages too from investing in yourself and investing in your business. And maybe one of these days we can do a whole episode on tax strategies for creative people. I have a super dorky article about that. I also have a super dorky article on this particular subject. It is called The Independent Musician's Guide to Not Going Broke. And I'm going to link to that in the show notes below. This is an article I wrote in 2013, a while after I got this situation more or less handled for myself. And I want to share what had been working for me and what I had studied and learned from others. And I still think that article is super useful. I think my investment strategy today is much more sophisticated and fun than what I suggested back then in that article, but it is a great place to start. And maybe we can go into some alternative investment strategies in some future podcast. So if you want more on this topic, it's a great resource to check out. And if you want more of my writing on my philosophy in investment, if you really want to nerd out on those ideas, you can go to justincoletti.com, my personal website. And on my blog there, you'll find that actually a lot of the writing there is about economics and finance, which is like my weirdly become my other hobby. I'm this weird guy. Like, there's so many people, right, in finance and in business who have a hobby in music. And I'm this weirdo who works in music professionally and has a hobby in studying economics and finance. Odd stuff. Never in a million years though I'd be interested. But man, you start to study markets and economics, you just get like tuned in to how the world actually works around you. And you kind of get interested in the goings on around the world. And it just brings so many things in your life potentially into laser focus. Even if it doesn't become an obsession of yours, if you can learn a little bit of the Econ 101 stuff, man, having studied this for years and years and years, I can tell you that all of economics is really just Econ 101 applied to an increasingly complicated set of problems. But the principles underlying clear economic thinking are actually really, really simple. And people go really, really wrong, even at really, really high levels, by straying from them. But for today, I just want you to go away with those core principles. One, produce more than you consume. Two, pay yourself first. Make sure that you're having some of your income go to savings or investment before you even get a chance to think about spending it. Number three, in order to help you do that, come up with goals that are going to make it a lot easier and a lot more meaningful and sustainable to continue at a high savings rate or to give you the ammunition to increase your savings rate. Number four, track your spending. When you track your spending, you'll be able to figure out where you can cut and maybe even where you can increase some of your spending. And you can come up with a monthly budget, targets to hit, broad targets to hit in broad categories. Checking on that once a week, once a month, even once a quarter, it is better than what most people do. Number five, come up with a plan for earning more money. So write down how much you need to earn to meet the budget and goals that you've established. And then reverse engineer how you're going to do that, how much more you'll need to earn each month, and what specifically you're going to do to earn that additional money. Get your imagination going on what are the actual needs, wants, hopes, and desires that other people have, and how can I help serve those people and have them give back some value to me in exchange? That's really what making money comes down to, helping other people get what they want out of life. And they, in turn, can help you get what you want out of life. Isn't that pretty? All right. Number six, take the surplus that you have and earmark a portion of it for savings, a portion of it for investment. Savings are those immediate goals where you want to preserve capital and be careful with it. I can go into some strategies and maybe some other podcast about how best to save. And earmark some of it for investment. That stuff that you don't need to do for 5 years or 10 years, you can make that money literally exponentially grow by taking advantage of compounding interest and by making sure you're not investing in things that are really overvalued or really a bad deal, which too many people do too often. They buy, say, U.S. stocks when they're at their most expensive ever, like right now, hint, hint, or they buy gold or cryptocurrencies because they just went up a lot, which is maybe the exact opposite time that you want to buy those things. Maybe you want to buy those things when everybody hates them if you think either of those things are useful. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Real estate, again, when real estate is booming and it's the can't lose thing, it's probably when it's the most can lose thing. And you want to think about studying real estate and maybe going more into real estate when it's one of those sectors where everyone feels like, oh man, you lose your shirt and that stuff. So that's a principle to take away. And that is basically the seventh principle here, the seventh principle, which is when you're thinking about investing, think about how to take asymmetric risks. Think about how to minimize your downside while maximizing your upside. That's what all the best investors in the world do that I've studied quite a bit. And I've had significantly better than average results in, you know, percentage-based investment returns by following some of those principles. And man, it would be fun to do a whole podcast about that. If you guys ever want to dork out with me about like investing in a way where it's not like you're not day trading and like obsessing about stocks, but just like literally once every few months or once every year, you make some significant moves. And I'm talking about stuff that you can do with like very, very little money. And in this, I just want to reiterate for you that I did not come from a background of extreme wealth, and I would not consider myself extremely wealthy now either. What I am is comfortable, and what I was before was totally lost. What I have now is a framework for thinking about my money and finances, where if my money and finances ever go wrong, and they can to some degree, I'll have a way of getting back on track. I know that I can always find my way back to sustainability by actually doing the things that I need to do. So I'm not here to tell you that I'm a kajillionaire and you could become a kajillionaire like me, but I am here to tell you that there was a time when I didn't think any of the goals that I've actually reached in my life were attainable. And I learned this new skill and it helped me reach those goals. It helped me buy a house. It helped me start a family. It helped me have a career where I don't really have to think about going back to a day job. And even if things went bad, I wouldn't have to go back to a day job. And if I did, it would be because I was really interested in doing that day job and it might be fun. You know, I was able to take a lot of time off when my daughter was born and spend more time, you know, around my family when I wanted to do that. I was able to, you know, set myself up and move into mastering. And I had a bit of a cushion to make a transition from doing more mixing to doing more mastering. There are so many great things you can do, and they can be humble, achievable goals. You don't necessarily have to shoot to become a multimillionaire to be happy with your financial situation. Maybe you want to be a multimillionaire. If your goals require that, God bless you. As long as you're not ripping people off and stealing from people to get there, do it. If you're making money by helping other people realize their wants, needs, hopes, and desires, more power to you. However little or however much you want to earn, go for it. All that I ask is that you establish some goals for yourself and you use your knowledge about money and finance in order to help you reach those goals. And that's what I care about. If you can do that, bless you. I think that's awesome stuff. Man, this has been a fun and interesting podcast for me. I know it's an unusual one for a music, audio, studio, creative business podcast, but I hope you enjoyed exploring these ideas with me. I hope they light a fire under your butt to actually do some stuff. And I hope you have some actionable ideas about how to go out right now and start changing your situation. These ideas are simple. They're surprisingly simple. But actually doing them can actually give you really significant results. If you do each of the things that we talked about in this podcast, I think you'll be amazed about how different your life could be in 3 months, and then in a year, and then in 3 years, and then in 10 years. Man, even if you've been on track with this stuff in the past, if you just use this as an opportunity to check back in, say, how are things going? Am I on track for my goals? Are there some new goals I should be adding into my life? Hey, maybe I can increase my earning or cut my spending, or maybe I can just pat myself on the back and say, we're in a comfortable place. If it inspired you to do any of those things, I'm a happy camper. So thank you for hanging out with me. And a big thanks to our sponsors. Once again, SonarWorks sponsoring all this month. Great way to improve the response of your room if you're doing any kind of audio work. Also improve the response of your headphones. Make them flatter and more neutral. Check out sonarworks.com. Eventide, check them out, eventideaudio.com, making some of the coolest, most interesting hardware effects out there, and also some of the coolest, most interesting software effects out there. Crazy reverbs, crazy delays, the whole anthology bundle is just, there's insane tools in there. Crazy compressor called the Omnipressor, which I've used a whole bunch of fun stuff. And then also Sound Toys. I would say most of the same things for sound toys I said about Eventide, except they don't make hardware. They have some of the most fun plugins out there. Check them out, soundtoys.com. You can get a free trial on any of that stuff. Echo Boy, you've got to try it. Decapitator, Devil Lock, so many cool things. So thanks to all of them. Thanks to you again for hanging out with me. See you next time.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.